In Indian thought, we have these very interesting, strange myths and legends. And it is such a many-sided effort that in many things one wonders whether this is spiritual, because in today's times we regard as spiritual only sitting and meditating in a cave. And the first thing that people expect to know or learn in an ashram is how to meditate. But hardly anyone comes to ask how to live. Everybody wants to become superhuman before passing through the stage of humanity. So this is because it's a wrong conception. Last few hundred years, it's also a kind of paucity of thought that we believe that spirituality means going away from life, from world. But Satyavan and Savitri have not come for that. They have come to give to the earth a divinely human example. She is his Shakti, the mother, and he is the Lord who has taken a human form. And their divine example will set in motion new vibrations, a new consciousness, which will now be for the earth to follow. They will set the new standard, new yardstick. The old world, where we lose the spirit and only the symbol remains, becomes a shell and a ritual. So the divine resets the clock. He breaks the old world, where things become mere rituals, and he sets the spirit in free once again. So this is what follows now. And being human, they must also show how at a human level, the human dharma can be fulfilled in a divine way, because they are the divine incarnate. This is very interesting that they set a new standard in yardstick. I think tomorrow there is this play, Ellie, which is based on Mother's play. It's an adaptation, I believe. So I don't know what is meant by adaptation, because adaptation, I'm a bit scared about adaptations. But I believe it's a very beautiful play, very well done. And it's from the Mother's play, Towards the Future. Now, it's interesting that Mother has called it Towards the Future. Now, it's a play where basically everything is beautiful, but moving from one level to another. A husband and wife where relationship has become merely a kind of duty, that relationship goes away. And the man goes towards somebody else where there is affinity, more natural affinity. And the woman goes still higher and deeper. She says, I realize that only one love, true love, and that is the love for the divine which can fulfill me. So it is like all the characters are moving towards the future. At the same time, it is the trend setting towards the future. So no more that old trend where a woman, because she was married, she has to be eternally the slave. She had to bear the burden of the whatever the man did. She had to say, no, no, I am your dasi and all that stuff. Mother has set a new trend towards the future. She liberated women from this kind of slavery. At the same time, she has released the energy of love in a very beautiful way. Love should not be based on an external ritualistic thing like an outer knot. It is an inner knot. And when that is there, in fact, at one place the mother says, the only return for love is love. And there is no other. She doesn't talk about legalities at all. Now marriages have become legal on a stamp paper. But this is not the secret of marriage. The secret of marriage is a union of souls which aspire and walk the same path and are complementaries, and they must come together, because by their coming together, they gain from each other through this interchange, and they can help each other in the essential. This was the original sense. That is how the mother gave this message on marriage. When somebody asked her, she gave this message that to unite in your body and sensations is good, but it is not enough. To unite in your emotions and will, to be moved by the same thought, all this is good. To understand each other is very good, but it is not enough. And then she says beautifully, at the apex of the world, in the depths of the being, there is a fire. To be united around that, to walk the same path, holding hands together at the same pace, to the same goal, that is the secret of a lasting union. Now, this was the secret truth. But this truth has got distorted. There is an outer fire and there is a priest who will sit, who is waiting for quickly for the Dakshina. He is least bothered what is going to happen. And of course, nowadays also, probably in the modern age, there are lawyers who take the place of priest, who will take a certain percentage. I have participated in such marriages also, known people who have got married with this stamp paper. And this is the modern priest. But what was the original sense of this marriage? What did it mean? So apart from the other deeper symbols which we will see, the marriage of the Lord and the spouse sets a new pattern for this earth. That is why while all other marriages are forgotten despite the albums, which probably are, you know, people hate to see after a few years, but what is remembered by the earth is the marriage of Shiva and Parvati. What is remembered by the earth is the love of Radha and Krishna. What is remembered by the earth is Sita and Rama's, their togetherness. Despite the fact that they get separated, despite the fact that Radha never married Krishna, despite the fact that Shiva and Parvati had to go through so many trials, she had to be reborn, die and be reborn. Yet, these are marriages which are remembered forever in the earth history. That is the secret sense of marriage. It is a mystic interchange. And of course, it is also the marriage of the soul and nature. In Indian thought, marriage, everything is seen as a symbol. So the symbol of marriage is the Purusha is the witness self. That is why at one place he says, you are roaming with your witness self all around. And the feminine principle is the executive power. Without him, the Purusha principle may have everything, great ideas, but these great ideas are meaningless. When she comes, she takes that idea, and not only does she organize the outer home, she organizes the life of the person according to this idea. So you can know a person, whether he is married or not, from the way he would arrange his clothes and dresses and his shoes, because before that, every man, what does it matter? Shoe is somewhere, shirt is somewhere, everything is somewhere. But when the woman comes, she begins to organize his life. No, this is not the place. Hang it properly. Do this way. And then he sees also, and he begins to understand the tremendous organizing power that goes behind the feminine, because she is the power. And after a while, the man becomes so dependent that he is helpless because he can't exist. So she comes as if she is a dependent. But what she does eventually teaches him by making him a little child. She retrains him. What his mother, the first trainer, educator is the mother. But she can only up to an age. Then she fails. Then the mother comes again. But she comes now as the wife. All the roles of the mother she will do. But otherwise people say wife. But actually it is all the role of the mother. From feeding, caring, to dressing, to the sense of color, to organizing power. Everything is done by that. So here is that beautiful and many more truths. I mean, there are endless truths in it. But first those two lines, I stand corrected. O death, thou reasonest, I reason not. I am, I love, I see, I act, I will. This is what Savitri says. I am. I know I am. No amount of death can destroy who I am. Because I am not this body. I am not this layer of flesh. I am not my breath. I am. Even if you tell me that everything will be destroyed, I know I am. Next. I am not alone. I spread out into the whole world. Give myself to this creation. So I love. Savitri loves. This is the second act. The same I extending into this whole creation is love. I see. I don't know through knowledge. I see in the light of the truth. In the light of that love I see. And when I see, I act. So the mystery is why there is I will after the act. Normally we will and act. But will turns towards the future. So Savitri sees and acts. She sees the truth and acts. And then what does she do? She already begins to shape the future by her will. This is the beauty of that. And we have heard how Savitri says, again in two short sentences, O Satyavan, I have heard thee and I know. I know that thou and only thou art he. Then down she came from her high carven car, descending with a soft and faltering haste. Her many hued raiment, glistening in the light, hovered a moment over the wind-stirred grass, mixed with a glimmer of her body's ray, like lovely plumage of a settling bird. What beauty in this line. Her dress, her very body, they are glowing. Even her hands are aglow with that joy of love and the light that is within her heart. And her coming down, she comes down to save, to rescue with that power of love. She has come down into a mortal's house, made a mortal heart her shrine. This is how the divine comes down into our life, into our human life. Why does she come down? Because Satyavan has said, descend. He has not said, teach me the yoga, I will do sadhana and ascend in consciousness. He has simply said, descend, come down by your joy and my joy. And she comes down, chooses to inhabit. Her gleaming feet upon the green gold sward. Now, not only a body, even a feet. Look at the description. They are gleaming upon the green. Scattered a memory of wandering beams and lightly pressed the unspoken desire of earth, cherished in her too brief passing by the soil. What is the desire of earth? Again, the mother's feet. We, of course, are so human-centric. What would the earth have felt when mother touched the soil? Shobindra speaks of that. And saw the imperishable passage close. She saw the spaces ready for her feet when she comes down and touches the earth. How it must have thrilled. All its desire and anguish. We are waiting for that one moment. All the joy that our panting heart wants is conjured in that one brief moment of the divine touch. That is why so beautifully Shurvindo in his poem Krishna reveals this truth. For this one moment lived the ages past. The world now throbs fulfilled in me at last. And what he has discovered? That my heart, which has felt the hungry heart of earth, aspiring beyond heaven to Krishna's feet. This is the aspiration in earth, and all our desires are pointing towards that. That is why they can never be satisfied. It's not because God is cruel. It is because he loves. And of course, he is a very, very possessive lover. And it's good that he is so. If he was not possessive, the earth would have been abandoned. He would not let any other love overtake his love. And for the heart that has once turned to God, he will transmute everything. So much so that whomsoever a bhakta loves, that person begins to change into that image. Because this is how he loves. He will make sure that he will come. In one way or the other, he will enter our life. In 100 ways, 1,000 ways, from every side, he will enter our life. And he will make sure that we remain only and exclusively for him. Any other clinging supports he will take away. Because this is how he loves. Love means possession. Otherwise, there is no love. Sri Aurobindo speaks of that. So there is this joy that she comes and descends. And her feet, they press upon the earth's desire. And for one moment, they feel fulfilled. This is the story again in our myths of Rama touching the Shila. He presses this earth, solid matter, and it changes into a godlike image. Ahilya is transformed into a godly being because Rama's feet have touched. Then flitting like pale brilliant moths her hands took from the sylvan verges sunlit arms a load of their jewel faces, clustering swarms, companions of the springtime and the breeze. How Aurobindo, master poet, is describing that she is taking away. What she is picking flowers, he could, in simple words, he would have said, is because she picks up flowers. But what are these flowers? They belong to the sun. They are the companions. When we pluck flowers, we don't even think that, you know, they belong to the earth. They belong to the sun. How Aurobindo is describing, he takes away something of the jewel faces. A candid garland set with simple forms, her rapid fingers taught a flower song. So she's not just making a garland, it's a song. So poetry is not just a poetry of words, it's also a poetry of action. There is a poetry of movements. Some people move and walk with such a beauty in that rhythm. Aurobindo says that in Savitri. Immortal rhythm swayed in her time-bound steps. There is a rhythm in that walk. And that rhythm is poetry. It is poetry of the body. Just as work is worship of the body. So, doing everything with a sense of rhythm and harmony is the poetry of the body. So, we may not write poetry this way, but this poetry. So, women write this kind of poetry. They don't write that kind of poetry, which men write with words. The stanzaed movement of a marriage hymn, profound in perfume and immersed in hue. So what was the hymn? She has woven the hymn like a song in the form of a garland. They mixed their yearnings, colored signs and made the bloom of their purity and passion one. What really is a flower? Why do we have flower garlands? Look, this is what, not like get a costly garland and put it. Whether it's a man or a donkey, doesn't matter. Anyways, they are the same. But something else, this flower is passionate about the sun. Look how it blooms. It aspires for the sun, craves for the light. Fresh air, it craves for that. So there is passion in it. And at the same time, there is purity in it. Nothing else it would take. It wants that and that alone. And look, the combination of purity and passion. Normally we confuse purity with dullness. Pure people are very dull. They don't smile. They will eat rukha shukha. Not, you know, they'll be. But that power of purity gives such sweetness, such love, such tremendous passion, but a pure passion. So flowers are a symbol of that. So her own purity and passion for Satyavan, she has symbolically put in that flower. What a gesture. I mean, I am reminded of this in Ramayana, Tulsidas Ramayana, Ramcharitmanas. How the poet describes Sita's falling in love with Rama. She has fallen in love, but she, you know, the poet has to present it with perfection. She doesn't say, oh Rama, how nice if I could get married. She instead goes to Gauri and says, you know, can I, is he the one? I think he is the one, Gauri. I pray to you for him. And then a flower drops from Gauri and he says, yes, I have been blessed. Holds that flower in her hands and comes back. What does Rama do? Rama wants to have a look at Sita's face when they are marrying. So he is the symbol of ultimate modesty and all the virtues. So Rama can't be, you know, like flitting around like that. So Rama sees in the ring of Sita a reflection of her face. And that is how she says, oh, I have seen my beloved. So look here, that garland becomes a symbol of all the tender love in her heart, of all the purity and passion she puts into that garland. Then with raised hands that trembled a little now, at the very closeness that her soul desired, this bond of sweetness, their bright union sign. What is the sign of this union? A legal stamp paper? No. The sweetness, the joy of togetherness. If there is joy and sweetness, it is a sign that there is love. And if it is only a legal document, then it is worth the dustbin. That is how, that's why today, in today's times, this new thing has come up, living. This is inspired way back. Savitri and Satyavan, original. They never got married formally. That is how it looks. Sri Aurobindo has at least set in motion that new pattern. The bond of sweetness, their bright union sign, she laid on the bosom coveted by her love. As if inclined before some gracious god, who has out of his mist of greatness shone, to fill with beauty his adorer's hours, she bowed and touched his feet with worshipping hands. I mean, Sri Aurobindo, this is called really amazing. The Divine Mother, because she is in the human play, must touch the feet of the Lord who has come as a human, ignorant human mortal. This is her play. How the mother would come, place the garland at Sri Aurobindo's feet, comb his hairs. So Dilip Kumar Roy once told mother, "Mother, you and Sri Aurobindo are good friends, no? I mean, there was something else hidden behind, like an undercurrent, which the mother caught." And she told, "You know, he calls me mother." She's the mother. And yet, she surrenders. Why? Because this is the human play at a human level. And he becomes a child in her arms, a babe. She must come and part his hairs like a mother does. Prepare sometimes his breakfast with her own hands. Make sure that he eats. Say what he should not eat. When people would give him too many pantuas and sweets, she would say, "No, don't do it." And once when mother is not there and the pantua is there, so beautifully captured by Nirodha, he says, "I suppose I can take a little." How beautiful that relation. In mother and Sri Aurobindo's relation, one sees that image of the mother and the eternal Krishna as eternal child playing. And at another level, he is also the one of whom she is the Shakti. Look, both relations. So here, she is the world mother. So why should she touch the feet? She is touching the feet because he is the adorer, the Bhakta. And for the Bhakta, divine can do anything. This is also the story of Mahabharata, where when Arjuna is doing, Yudhishthira is doing Rajasu Yajna. So everybody has to be given a job, duties. So Duryodhana, what duty should I give? Yudhishthira says, give him the duty of distributing money from your coffers. Why? Oh, he is very jealous of you. He will give much more than what is required. So he will want to empty your coffers and you want it like that, no? He says, yes. So give him that duty. What duty will you take, Lord? I will pick up everybody's used plates. Such a touching story. The Lord chooses to pick up everybody's used plates. Why would he do it? Because he loves. And where there is love, all high and low vanishes. All ifs and buts become meaningless. How Arjuna says, "I have put my arms around you and walked. I did not know you are this." Sri Krishna would say, "I allowed you. I love you, it's okay. Out of love we can do it. But if you put me like the divine, then yes, no. But not only you love me, Arjuna, I also love you. You love me, therefore you see me as the divine. But I love you, therefore I become human and I'm willing to drive your chariot." Who would do it? It's a very inferior thing. To drive the chariot means something very, very inferior. But the divine would do it. Drive the chariot, cook a meal, touch the feet, pick up used plates. So look, this bhava is conveyed in these lines. As if inclined before some gracious god, who has out of his mist of greatness shone, to fill with beauty his adorer's hours. She bowed and touched his feet with worshipping hands. She wants to fill his adorer's hours with beauty. He adores her. So how beautiful when she bows down and touches the feet. She made her life his world for him to tread, and made her body the room of his delight, her beating heart a remembrancer of bliss. Now Sri Aurobindo is leading us deeper and deeper into the mystery of love. Even there is a mystic truth of physical coming together. Sri Aurobindo has hinted at it even in one of his later writings, in Supramental Manifestation, where he says that all animal crudity and all this must go away and one has to completely conquer the impulse. And then he says, however, there is a truth behind this and therefore it cannot be rooted out in its entirety. It has to be transformed. And Sri Aurobindo just hints at it. In evening talks, he is more explicit. But when the disciple asks, sir, tell us the truth, tell us the truth. He says, no, I am not inclined to tell the truth. Because ignorant humanity will use it as a concession. Even the love where the physical togetherness comes in, this is a mystic truth. And of course, the great, now controversial writing, of course, thanks to Anmol, got posted. But it is Nalinidas' Bengali writing published, Manaser Bhajan, where he says, to love man is more difficult than loving God. And after we have loved God, we have to learn to love man. But love in a new way. Savitri is showing us what is that new way. Where every aspect of humanity gets transformed. That is why in the end, Savitri will say, I am still, lo, we have looked upon the face of God and our life has been raptured by eternity. Yet I am still the Madran. I am still the same to you. Heaven's love fulfills but cancels not our earth. Here we see that touch. Heaven's love. Savitri is the divine mother. Satyavan is the soul aspiring yet caught up in ignorance. So she brings heavenly love. But what about the human side of that love? It doesn't cancel it. You see, it lifts it to heights of the absolute. And that is what we find in the play of Radha and Krishna. In fact, Jayadev has written it so beautifully, which is of course a masterpiece, Geet Govind. And many people who are Puritans cannot understand it. So those people who have problem with these lines, some people have asked me from, oh, why did Sri Aurobindo write this in Savitri? I recommend them read Geet Govind. Then you come, you will understand. In Geet Govind, Radha is angry. Why? Because Sri Krishna has not come back one night. So next day when he comes, he bows at her feet and says, I'm very sorry. I love you very much. I'm very sorry. And puts his head on her lap and says, look. And this is not just a mystic's imagination. It's a blessed life. It's a blessed creation. It is said that when Jayadev, once when he was composing the hymn, he couldn't get a word correctly. So he left it there because he was trying to get it right. He couldn't get, so he went for a bath. So when he came for the bath, he saw that, you know, something is... He says, who touched my script? He says, why? You have become so forgetful. You came, you wrote this word and you have gone away and now you are saying that who touched it? He said, but I never came, I went for the bath. So it is said that Sri Krishna himself came and wrote that word. It's a mystic literature of that power. And if somebody reads it, who is too Puritan with an unchaste mind, one can never understand what has this got to do with spirituality. But look, human Indian spirituality is so vast. So here now we are entering that aspect. He bent to her and took into his own. Their married yearning joined like folded hopes. As if a whole rich world, suddenly possessed, wedded to all he had been, became himself. All that he was, he poured into Savitri, and all that she was, all her dreams that she would be, and all his dreams, they were poured together through the union of the body in a mystic interchange. The body was not the body anymore, but a vehicle, a container. And it was used as a container for the pouring of two great consciousnesses. An inexhaustible joy made his alone. He gathered all Savitri into his clasp. How beautiful these lines are. this embrace is not a physical embrace. There is a physical way to embrace. There is a vital way to embrace, an embrace of passion and desire. There is a mental way to embrace. Oh, I have to do this as a duty. It is a formality, a ritual. But there is a spiritual embrace where the totality of that person is accepted. Embrace is not, it has become distorted, ugly, dark. But in its origin, what is an embrace? It's an acceptance and a giving. The mother embraces a child. It's her most powerful expression of love. And at every level it can work out. That look, in every relation, the embrace means I accept you wholeheartedly, whatever you may have been, whatever you are. At the same time, I give myself completely. So this is the embrace which Sri Aurobindo describes around her. His embrace became the sign of a locked closeness through slow, intimate years. This embrace is a sign. It's not that one moment I have embraced and forgotten. It means for all times to come, I accept you and give myself to you. So it says it's a sign of a first sweet summary of a locked closeness through slow, intimate years. A first sweet summary of delight to come. One brevity intense of all long life. This is the problem and this is the solution of love. What is the problem of love? Sri Aurobindo says in the synthesis. In fact, in synthesis also he says, all love and sacrifice, including human love and sacrifice, if it can touch the level of adoration, it has a purifying power in it. And then he also reveals, love seeks by its nature for two things. A mutual possession and an intensity and eternity of union. Now the problem with human love is that there may be intensity but not eternity. One moment and after that all the drama starts, Saas Bhi Kabhi Bahu Thi and all those, you know, kind of soap serial starts. And life becomes tears and all that and people become bitter. But that one moment was a true moment. It's not that it was untrue. But that was a moment when our soul looked out. But it gets veiled because we don't live in the soul all the time. The ego comes, the mind comes, the vital comes. But the solution is to bring that soul state more and more forward and not to get locked into the ego. So it is the first sweet summary of the delight to come. It is possible if the soul state can remain, then the intensity can also become eternal. So here they already know this secret. In a wide moment of two souls that meet, she felt her being flow into him as in waves, a river pours into a mighty sea. This is giving. The mother gave herself to Sri Aurobindo without a word. And as Sri Aurobindo says, right down to the very physical cells. Pavitrada gave himself to the mother without a word, whole night, pumping each from every corner of the cell, he took out the consciousness. These two acts of love, it doesn't matter what is the relation, which way. Of course, this relation finds its most intense fulfillment when it turns to the divine, because it is boundless. There is no limit to which one can give to the divine. As when a soul, now look how Sri Aurobindo describes, now this is the description of what true human love, which is touched by the presence, can become. As when a soul is merging into God, to live in him forever and know his joy, her consciousness grew aware of him alone, and all her separate self was lost in his. It doesn't matter which way one does it. Self-giving pulls us out of the ego, makes us vast. That is why in Indian thought there is the conception of sati and not of sata. Sati is only women are capable of it. And what was the way? They just loved the man, but not the man, but the divine presence in him. And by this act of self-giving, they rose to a stature greater than that of the man. We know the story of Atri Rishi and his wife Anusuya. Very few people know what Atri would have done. But Anusuya could make even the gods jealous of her. She could turn them into a little baby. And it is said that she is the highest paradigm, highest possibility of Sati. She is regarded, of all the Satis, she is regarded as the highest Sati. Similarly, we have other examples. Sita, she is a Sati. And because she is a Sati, she tells Ravana, dare not come closer to me. How will you defend yourself, Sita? Rama is not here and his monkey army is not here. Who will save you? The power of my love will save me. My love is true. You cannot snatch me away from him. And she puts a little blade of grass. And Ravana dares not step. He is Vedvati, another Sati. She has this power. It is her curse because of which Ravana eventually dies. This power of Sati. Draupadi has 5 husbands. Still she is a Sati. Why? Because she loves in her heart only Krishna and has given herself to him. Look how many angles this idea of complete love and self-giving is revealed to us. And because Draupadi is a Sati, she is not just an ordinary human being. Therefore, just because Dushasan touches her, not only he but the whole clan is destroyed. This is the power of love. The conception of Sati was not to become a doormat. It is the power of love that is born out of truth. That's what is Sati. So Savitri knows this. And in that one moment, she gives herself fully to Satyavan. And by giving, one becomes greater. Just as when one gives to God, one becomes boundless. One steps out of the shell of the ego. So in whatever form of love, even to a stone, if one thinks this is God and gives oneself, one experiences the same thing. But it should be true love, not attachment and just that kind of a expectation, hopes, desires. Then this magic doesn't work. There is a magic key to it. As a starry heaven encircles happy earth, this was another symbol in Indian thought. The man was called as heaven and the earth was called as, the woman was called as earth. Nalanda has written another beautiful essay on this and how the man and woman relation was seen as the relation of heaven and earth. Who is greater? We would say heaven. No. It is the earth. Why? Because she holds all things and draws even heaven close to her because of her power of attraction. So the marriage of heaven and earth, which the Vedic rishis spoke about and aspired for, there is an inner truth of it and there is also an external corresponding truth of it. So Sri Aurobindo is giving that symbol that as heaven encircles the stars, he shut her into himself in a circle of bliss and shut the world into himself and her. This embrace carried the whole universe. It was embracing the universe through the being of Savitri. A boundless isolation made them one. Again, look at this line. There are 2 kinds of love and isolation in love. One where one gets cut off from everything else. The other where one includes everything else. One that is limited and brings craving and all that. The other where it is boundless and yet it is an isolation. He was aware of her enveloping him and let her penetrate his very soul, as is a world by the world's spirit filled, as the mortal wakes into eternity, as the finite opens to the infinite. What greater tribute can anyone pay to love? And people say Sri Aurobindo is a philosopher. Abstraction of thought. How very down to earth he can be and even feel that down to earthness by the touch of the highest heavens. So he describes this moment of embrace as the mortal waking into eternity, because otherwise we are caught up in love makes us forget ourselves and suddenly we feel, this is going to last forever. That is why people utter this word forever only when they are in love. Otherwise they don't speak about it. Oh, I will love you forever. This, because it gives that sense of eternity. Because one wants that moment to last forever. It carries within it that magic of bliss. And as the finite opens to the infinite, there is no limit to it. It looks as if there is no limit to that love. Thus were they in each other lost a while. Then drawing back from their long ecstasies, trance, again, we have heard about trances which sadhakas experience in meditation. This too is a trance where one is transported into bliss by an act of boundless love. Of course, not what men call love, but by that love which the soul experiences for the divine. And wherever it experiences that love in any form whatsoever, for a moment it can experience that trance of bliss. Came into a new self and a new world. So when they came back, they were different. So if people saw, they would have said, "Ah, Satyavan, you look so changed." Yes, of course, because I have seen love. Each now was a part of the other's unity. It means that one has accepted, taken everything of the other person. This is unconditional love. Not that I love this part and not that. I love when you are fine, but not when you are angry. Then I don't love, because that is demon coming out. No. When one loves, one loves. I love you when everything is fine. But when things are not fine, I don't love you. No. I accept your fate and destiny as mine. This is what Savitri does. So it is a total unconditional acceptance. So each becomes a part. The world was, but now Shobhinda brings it back to the scene, the Lord and the spouse, because only they are capable of that love. Only divine love is capable of loving another person divinely, unless that love is born into our human heart. So that is why first the ignorant human love, next the divine love, and which transmutes and casts away the ignorance, and third, the return to earth, the divinization of human love. That is the last step. So already that is being foretold in Savitri. The world was but their twin self-finding scene. Now they have decided to hold hands together and walk. Or their own wedded being's vaster frame. On the high, now see the marriage, how it takes place. On the high glowing cupola of the day, fate tied a knot with morning's halo thread. Who will come and who will perform the wedding? Wedding is not a ritual. Muhurtam, which is the muhurt. The moment of love and giving is the moment of marriage. So that is the moment. Who will tie the knot? The husband and the wife tie the knot. Fate has tied the knot. Savitri has come. It is not that he was craving, "Oh, I wish I had." He was not doing that. He was satisfied. He was an Atmarathi. Savitri was also looking for the other self with whom her work is there. She was not craving, "Oh my God, if I wish I am so alone, I wish I had somebody." That's a weak sentimental love. This is not. Fate has come and tied a knot. While by the ministry of an auspice are heart bound before the sun, their marriage fire. The sun became the fire. And who became the minister? Time itself became the minister. That is why when people say, "I want to do this open the house ceremony on the Darshan day and I want to come to Pondicherry Ashram on 24th April and I want to," even some people want to plan a child on 21st February. It is irrelevant. Whenever a thing is done in remembrance of the Lord, that moment is auspicious. Even Rahu Kalam will become auspicious. And why not let every moment be a moment of the Lord? Why limit him to 4 darshan days and 5th once in 4 year days? Why not every day become a day of the Lord? One day some house opening, another day some marriage, third day some child. Every day can become a day of the Lord when it is done with the right inner attitude. But if that is missing, even a darshan day will become the same. As mother has said, even darshan days all kind of dark forces come. So here the ministry of an auspice hour. That is the auspice hour. Heart bound before the sun. Their marriage fire. The wedding of the eternal Lord and spouse. This is how every marriage is supposed to be. In Indian thought, in Indian tradition, in every marriage, the story that they are supposed to hear to prepare for the marriage. Now, of course, people read, "Men are from Mars, women are from Venus." Mars and Venus. They go to counselors counseling them about love. How did in Indian thought people were counseled? they were told the story of Shiva and Parvati. So what is the meaning of that story? Doesn't matter. He may be poor. He may not have good dressing sense. Shiva has the worst dressing sense. He may be surrounded by all kind of things. Serpent around his neck. Still love him. That will change him. He may have ascetic tendencies. Careless about the world. But your presence will make him connected with the world. Be that bridge and the link. To Shiva also. The same story. You know, Savitri loves you. Parvati loves you. You must make sure. In all the worlds, you must protect her. Care for her. You cannot give money, but you can surely give your love and protection. Give that. She wants that. She doesn't want your money. She will be happy in Kailash. She doesn't want Vaikunth. She doesn't want Brahmalok. Kailash is austere. Not a good place to live. But she will live there happily. If you give her love. So they didn't say all this. But they just told the story of Shiva, Sati and Parvati. This was the symbol. So marriage of the eternal Lord and spouse. Took place again on earth in human forms. In a new act of the drama of the world, the united two began a greater age. What is this greater age? The old pattern of time is broken. Now they are going to set the trend. Prakriti has come back to the divine after thousands of years. She has wandered away and away. It's a very interesting that Mother and Shurbindo have come in every age, in every generation. We see she has been there as various, Elizabeth I, Hatshepsut, Catherine, the Great of Russia, Joan of Arc. And Shurbindo has also been there during these times in different forms. They didn't come together. What does it mean? The moment for the Prakriti to return back and once again be one with the Lord had not yet come. Prakriti is still going on the rhythms of the past, expanding herself. But time comes when a new act must start. So they must come together and unite. So we have all these avatars who come, they bring the Prakriti. And they are acknowledged, except perhaps in Buddhism, where also we have the story of the woman who came to Buddha and showed him the path. And of course, in the story of Christ, which has become a matter of so much controversy, because Mary of Magdalene is not being recognized. So there is a whole set of Christian thought that they say, no, she was very much part of his life. She was married to him. There is a whole lot of story. But in India, it was understood. Avatars come and once again, Prakriti comes and realigns. So when she realigns, a new moment starts. So the coming together of Mother and Shurbindo is a realignment of nature. She brings the whole world, all that it is, and pours at his feet. And she says, now, next step. As Radha, you asked me to create when you were Krishna and I have set the world in a certain way. What is the command now? And the command comes, conquer at any price. That is how she says later on. In a new act of the drama of the world, the united two began a greater age. In the silence and murmur of that emerald world and the mutter of the priest wind's sacred verse. So who is chanting the mantras? The winds are chanting the mantra. How Shurbindo is unconventional, liberal and vast. And we want to once again, what were the mantras chanted during marriage and let's chant even whether they know it or not. And some of them are saying, do it fast, Murtam is getting over. Of course, these mantras have a nice meaning. But look at another mantra. When you are in the right state, then the chant of the breeze is a mantra. How beautiful he can make things and how simple. And people say he is complicated. He is the one who has made things so simple. He is priest and the mantras. Amid the choral whispering of the leaves, love's twain had joined together and grew one. Love is the power that makes everything one. The natural miracle was wrought once more. The miracle of love, which changes. It is the natural miracle. In nature, everything changes by the power of love. When two cells come together, a third one is born, which is unique. The first touch of love, even at the cellular level, brings the sense of immortality. We are talking about much later. If two cells don't come together, they will die. But when they come together, a new cell is born. That is a kind of immortality. The content of the cells extends into another. Every day's biology is a proof of this. That love, even at the most elementary level, defies death. So Sri Aurobindo uses the word natural miracle. It's a miracle that goes on. Two cells come together and they defy death. They may die, but they have continued and extended themselves into another being. That is why the word used for a child in Sanskrit is santan. It's literally an extension tan of oneself. So the body dies, but oneself extends. Why? Because love has created this miracle. In the immutable ideal world, one human moment was eternal meat. So that one moment, a moment of love, is also a moment of bliss. It is the moment of eternity. So we'll continue tomorrow.